This is America Weekend. I'm Mike Bennett. We'll be talking with filmmaker Brett Morgan about his latest Kurt Cobain montage of heck in just a moment. But first, this is what you should be paying your babysitter. Babysitters today, particularly the good ones, make well above minimum wage and in some cities average more than $15 an hour. According to research from Care.com, in the past 5 years, the average pay of babysitters nationwide has jumped 28% to $13.44 an hour. More than one in four people tip their babysitter on top of the hourly rate they pay them, and nearly 9 out of 10 say they will give their sitter an annual raise. How do you know exactly how much to pay your sitter? Well, the age of your children has something to do with it. Parents should expect to pay a little more for younger children who tend to need more constant watching, diaper changes, and can't yet feed themselves without help. Consider paying at least $1 an hour more for a younger child or a child who needs a lot of attention. The number of children. More children means you'll have to pay more to the babysitter, obviously. Experience. Babysitters with more experience get more money, usually $1 an hour or more than the less experienced counterparts. Babysitter training. The more highly trained your sitter, be it a degree in early childhood education or first aid or CPR training, the more you will pay him or her. This could mean $1 to $2 an hour or more bump in pay over a less experienced sitter. And parental expectations. The more you expect her or him to do, the more you'll need to pay them. By the way, New York City had perhaps the highest hourly wage for a babysitter, $15 an hour. While in Des Moines, Iowa, the rate was under $12 an hour for a babysitter. Here are a few telltale signs you might want to clean up your list of social media friends. Number one, their face is annoying you. Too many posts of too many photos, and while this person can and should continue to do whatever they want, there's no way to get away from the fact that their face annoys you. They post 5 selfies a day with an absurd amount of hashtags, no clever comments, no funny stories, and no captivating photos ever. Number two, you have lost respect for them. Unfriend them because at some point they did something that made you stop taking them seriously as a person. It may be something that's none of your business and very likely something that does not warrant a confrontation, but still, it might be time to say bye-bye and unfriend. Number three, they are boring, and you don't understand why they alert 800 friends and followers to the fact that they have a headache. Number four, they are fascinating, really. That's why you have to delete them. You waste far too much time and brain space on what is going on in their life, even though you never speak. Number five, they share in riveting detail every problem they have with their children. Every day you watch a mini train wreck about the children in slow motion on social media. You are following these horror stories, but you ask yourself, why? Number six, they rant about politics every single day. And even if you agree with them, you don't need to hear which politicians are bad and which ones are good. Number seven, they can't go 24 hours without telling everyone how great their life is. And if it is so great, why do they bother to interrupt this awesomeness constantly by sharing it on social media? And finally, another reason to dump one of your friends on Facebook, they like or favorite every single thing you share, yet you've never actually met in real life. In a sense, it's flattering, but it's also a gigantic what the heck. There's no way you are that fascinating. You don't want to assume they're creepy, but you definitely think they're creepy. CardHub today released its picks for the 2015 best credit cards for back-to-school shopping, along with 9 money-saving tips in order to help reduce the burden on parents' wallets. The best initial bonus is on the Citi Thank You Premium Card, 50,000 bonus points for spending $3,000 in the first 3 months, and no annual fee for the first year, $85 afterwards. Filmmaker Brett Morgan's latest effort is the documentary called Kurt Cobain, Montage of Heck.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm okay. Kurt Cobain, Montage of Heck. I've heard great things about it. When we see it, what will we learn about Kurt Cobain that maybe we didn't realize or understand or even know about?
Well, this is the first time that Kurt's story is, I think, being told in a manner that we received participation from the family. And what that meant was they gave us access to everything in Kurt's life. So, you know, what some of the film will sync up with some of the existing mythologies because that's where it came from. And I think for the most part, what people are going to walk away from is an appreciation of Kurt Cobain as an artist with a capital A. Most of us know him as a musician and the lead singer of Nirvana, but Kurt was creating from the moment he can hold a paintbrush in his hand. And he was sort of documenting his life, as we all know, because we love his art and his music. And, you know, in a very cinematic way, he worked in all mediums, not just music, but he also worked in film, painting, drawing, short fiction. And so this is a really unusual movie. This is a movie from the inside out rather than the outside looking in.
Well, I've heard, you know, as I said, good things about it. You just got a bunch of Emmy nominations, I know. And also in the news is this supposedly photographs of his death scene that would show that he didn't commit suicide. Do you have any question about how he died?
Oh, zero. And I think if you're going to pose that question to anyone, having had access to Kurt's entire journals, all of his art, the testimony of his mother, father, and sister, his closest confidants, everyone, there was not even a iota. The issues, the mental illness and the depression and the romance of suicide penetrated Kurt's life from a very early age. So to me, there was absolutely, you know, and let me say this. I'm not going to say there was no question in my mind prior to starting this film. I didn't know. It was not something I really thought too much about, but I could assure you from having explored the vault and the archive and looked and listened to all of his material, it's such a silly question because if you would listen to his lyrics, that's what he's singing about. I hate myself and I want to die. And in the movie, there's a great scene with David Frick, the one of the greatest music journalists, where he says to Kurt, you know, you have this song called I Hate Myself and Want to Die. And Kurt goes, well, you know, I just kind of wrote that as a joke. And where most people would have let Kurt off the hook on that, Frick pushes on him and goes, well, what's the joke? I don't see the humor in it. And it sort of goes to something Chris Novoselic says at the beginning of the film, that it was all there. The messages were all there. It's just people didn't take it, you know, just sort of thought it was rock and roll and it was a metaphor, and it wasn't. It's, you know, that question, I think, is really kind of laborious, and I can't think of another person where you would even question this person would be suicidal, given everything that Kurt both said in his music and in his words.
And now there'll be a companion book with this movie as well?
Yeah, there's a companion book because the movie's, it's a very immersive experience, which is why we're putting it in cinemas. You know, this was a movie in which we started working on the sound design the day we started cutting picture. It is a completely immersive theatrical experience. And, you know, everywhere around the world, this movie was released by Universal Pictures into cinemas. And America was the only country where we went out on broadcast. And that was because we wanted to reach as many people as possible. But I highly, even if you've seen the film, I highly encourage people to try to get to the IFC Center this weekend to try to experience Montage Attack on the big screen the way it was intended to be seen.
So you really want people to see it on the larger screen. Why does it play better on the movie theaters than on, say, your TV at home?
I'll tell you, Kurt Cobain worked, sound design and sound collage was its instrumental in Kurt's sort of creative output as just about anything else, short of music. And the sound design in this film was essentially created from 200 hours of unheard audio that I found in Kurt's archives. All these weird sound effects, and Kurt would doodle with these sounds, and he would always pan the sounds left and right and create these weird stereo effects. So we took all of that material and started cutting it from day one. The sound designer on this film is an Academy Award winner, did Schindler's List, Apollo 13, all these amazing films, and we spent 3 months working on the stage where Chris Nolan did Interstellar, right? That was to create a completely immersive sound design so that you felt that you were inside Kurt's sort of psyche, if you will. You know, and the sounds that you're hearing are emanating from Kurt. So sound design, which on television really is just almost a mono presentation, is a very limited part of a television documentary. However, in the theatrical realm, you know, it's like, you know, it's you're part of it. You're feeling it. And also, I think this is the best thing. David Frick, again, from Rolling Stone, when he saw the film with me at South by Southwest this year at a huge theater with 1,200 people, looked at me and said, I've seen Nirvana play dozens of times, and that is as close as anyone will ever get to experiencing Nirvana live. Because, you know, man, we listen to music either in our car or in our earbuds, but to be able to hear Nirvana blaring, and we're going to be playing this movie loud, blaring out of big movie theater speakers, is an experience. It's like hearing the music for the first time.
Well, listen, we look forward to seeing it. Brett Morgan, the director of the new movie Kurt Cobain, Montage of Heck. We thank you for a couple of minutes. Can't wait to see your work.
Thanks,
with director Brett Morgan of Kurt Cobain, Montage of Heck, I'm Mike Bennett, and you're listening to America Weekend.
America Weekend. Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-289-1668. That's 800-289-1668. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-289-1668.